Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jane Hoffman, and Bill Maher is at it again. If he had some kind of rational progress that would lead to valid points regarding cultural conditions and society's ailments, I could have some respect for him. 5 years ago, he was funny. Now he's just poorly rhetorical. Here's an example.
Because he knew where he was going, up to paradise, which gets us back to the idea of Islam as the motherlode of bad ideas for Eid.
Well, as you know, Bill, I've written a lot about the problems in Islam. In fact, I wrote about them well before you were talking about it because I was focused on that stuff. My problem with the way you approach it is I don't think you're going to reform a religion by telling 1.6 billion people, most of whom are just devout people who get some inspiration from that religion and go about their daily lives. I don't think you're going to change the religion by saying your religion is the motherlode of bad ideas. It's a terrible thing. Shape it up and change it. I think, frankly, you're going to make a lot of news for yourself and you're going to get a lot of applause lines and joke lines out of it. But if you really want to change those people, if you want to change that religion, then what you have to do is push for reform, but also with some sense of respect for what the spiritual values that people take. I'm not a religious guy, but all I'm telling you is I know that word. And if you tell everybody, you suck, your religion sucks, clean it up, then it's going to get their backs up against the wall.
Let's say it's not even a religion. Let's say there's a social club that believes women are second-class citizens, gay people should be put to death, you should be put to death.
But that's not all 1.6 billion people.
Not all.
If they did feel that way, you'd have a lot more than a few terrorist attacks.
You do know, Fareed. Come on, you do know.
I've seen that same Pew survey that you quote every time this comes up, and I'm not disputing it.
I'm not disputing it.
One time 4 years ago, Pew did the survey, and they got those
numbers. So you're saying in the Muslim world, it is not a widespread belief that death is the appropriate response to leaving?
I don't know because I didn't conduct that poll. All I'm telling you is that you go to those countries. You go to Indonesia, the largest Muslim country in the world, and they have lived happily with minorities. Women are given respect. Yes, is it as advanced as the West? No. But you don't have a huge problem of jihad there. The biggest problems you have are in pathologically dysfunctional Arab societies, which have had 40 or 50 years of repressive dictatorships in which they have driven all dissent into the most extreme places. But I began by saying, I have always said there is the word I've used is there is a cancer within Islam. Our difference is, how are you going to fix it? Do you really think you're persuading people with what you're doing? You're getting applause lines in the West. It's totally different.
That's insulting that I'm doing this for applause lines.
Well, I'm telling you the reality is you're not changing those people.
Welcome to the show. John Yoder will be joining us right now. Hi, John.
Hello, Jane. And how is thy holy hammer tonight?
She's raring to go. The name of the show is Bill Maher, Spiritual Assassin, the Ungodly, Unwise Man.
Woo, those are cruel words from the hammer.
Yeah, well, I just played an excerpt from the show on Friday night, and Fareed Zakari, I know you caught at least two-thirds of it. He said that Bill Maher's not going to, win any friends in the Islamic world that composed of 1.6 billion people by calling them the motherlode of bad ideas.
Ooh. Well, part of his success that people identify with is he's sharp-witted. He's kind of got a little sour taste to his comments usually. And a lot of his stuff is actually smarter, insightful. It's kind of on a skeptical kind of side. The problem, I think, that runs with it is he's voicing things in a way which is saying that anyone, whether you're Muslim or Catholic, Christian, Jew, or whatever, if you have a religious belief, you're just an idiot, you're a moron. And he'll take a couple of points, hit on it, and just say, you're just a babbling idiot. You have no idea of reality. And so kind of to that person's comment, you're not going to score a lot of points if you come into that the argument arena assuming that the other person's an idiot and that you're superior to them. If you can listen to their point, there's a reason why Islam has been around for a couple thousand years in Christianity.
It came out in the 6th century. Muhammad prophesied in the 6th century. That was 600 years after the ascension of Christ. By the way, we have a Skype person on our line, but I'm not going to pull that person in until they hear a little bit of the show. They've only been on hold a minute.
Oh, great. So it's kind of that thing where even if I'm engaging with an atheist, I want to appeal to their logic and appreciate, because there's a reason why they're an atheist. They're not just stupid. They've looked at the facts and they've come to a certain conclusion, and maybe they're right. These are issues of faith, whether you're an agnostic, atheist, or a God-believing person. And so to assume that they're an idiot, I try to come in assuming I don't know anything and that I can learn something from them. And I'm already well-versed in what I believe, so I'm pretty confident in it. I'm not easily shaken. And if someone has a better gospel or idea, I'm all game for it. You just got to present it in a way where it makes some kind of more sense than what I've got. And he doesn't come with that attitude.
Yeah,
kinda...
and like I said, I didn't intend to make my title that deprecating, but I used to like Bill Maher a lot. In fact, 5 years ago, I would have been willing to pay for HBO to get his show. But when he came out with that movie, it was a combination of the word religion and ridiculous. It was like ridiculous, but it was religious or something. And he just got to the point where he was blanketing criticizing all religions. And I believe he grew up in a Catholic school. He's not Jewish, like a lot of people think. But
right.
The thing is that if you want to be taken seriously, it's one thing if you're a humorist, like Eddie Murphy, but if you want to take on political issues and weigh the odds and try to, like, contour it, because he had Senator Elizabeth Warren on his show the other night. I mean, he has legitimate people in government on his show. If he wants to weigh these issues, then he has to factor religion in, whether he's a believer or not. And like Fareed Zakaria said, you have to give some respect and credence to these people who have these beliefs.
Right. I mean, I'll give you an example. His view towards religion is that it's like a filling. Like you have these fillings that aren't good for you. I forget what they call it. It's mercury, kind of like or lead type of fillings in your teeth. And he said, I had those put in when I was a kid, and I didn't understand the consequence of them, so I went to a dentist, and they drilled it all out of me. And I got all that poison out of my teeth and out of my brain, and I had them fill it with, something different, whether it was gold or, porcelain or whatever. And he said, that's what I did with religion. I got all these ideas out of my mind and drilled them out because they were bad. Well, when you come in with that assumption, the thing is, I was telling, dealing with a college student who debates with atheists all the time. And I said, the problem I have with atheists is they're assuming that they have knowledge and science and information that we're ignorant people. And they go, okay, show us God. Demonstrate that in a test. Make it consistent. And I kind of run the other direction. You live a life of faith that is so dependent on what people tell you. It's like, show me a Big Bang. I mean, show me. You say something, the Earth is, a billion years old or 100 million years old or whatever, the testing is. It's like, how do you know? How have you been along that? You'd have to be around a few million years to say that. You could even say, well, we have carbon-14. How do you know the effect of it over the period of years? You've only been doing scientific testing here those last, 50 to 100 years, really. So how do you know the effect of
the enlightenment? Well, the Enlightenment started taking place in the early 1800s, so it's more been like 200 years.
Well, the point is they don't have enough of a track record. And in any scientific experiment, what you have to do is demonstrate clearly and consistently, repetitively, the cause and effect, like with gravity, like with fire.
Actually, in Germany, they found the God particle. Have you ever heard of that?
I've heard of that, yes.
It was, yeah, it was an unexplained God particle. Now I have this, you can keep talking for a minute because I have to clear this extension off my system, but I'll explain it. Going to my point
is they're not able to clearly demonstrate evolution as they believe it to be, or I call it early transmutation, things mutating into another life form from a single cell or an amoeba or however you want to describe it. You can't show me an exact instance of the whole process. You can't show me exact instance of animals or human beings, Homo sapiens, evolving into something else, you know, like the three-headed man. And you might have a mutant person, you know, two heads joined. You might have someone who's got three arms instead of two. But these are mutants. They're trying to promote transmutation. Someone, you know, a fish becoming this and flying and becoming a bird, landing in a tree, becoming an ape, and walking down and, you know, suddenly standing upright. These are mutations, and they can't link. They always have these missing links. They can't quite piece it together. The point is they accept this by faith. Maybe it's true. But they don't have, just as I can't prove God or Jesus in a test tube, they can't prove these things either. These are just theories, concepts.
Well, caught any of the series on CNN about finding Jesus? They went over all the discoveries, like finding Noah's Ark in the Turkish mountains, where they found chunks of wood from dating back to thousands of years, and the Holy Shroud of Turin and all this other stuff, Turin, and the thing is I'm not going to waste my time trying to prove to people that God exists, because it's evident in nature, and I had a Holy Spirit conversion at a Billy Graham concert, and I felt a physical reaction when Christ, the Holy Spirit, entered my body. I can give my testimony, but for people who are really standoffish or abhorrent, I'm not going to waste my time. I'm just going to try to gain my strength through the support of the church and spiritual actions like serving the poor, because eventually through their own sorrow and life experience or letdowns, they're going to see the intuition of God fill their eyes and mind.
Well, you raise a very valid point. It's evident in creation. It's evident in life. There's some purpose or plan. That's the number one question that hounds us all, whether you're atheist or Christian. Why am I here? What is my purpose? Where am I going? Where do I go when I die? These are just basic questions. And the problem is if you deviate from whether you're being a Christian or a Jew or a Catholic or someone that's a Muslim, you don't have really any place to go with this. Like, you have no hope. There's nothing you're offering me. There's nothing more. It's random chaos. It's just an accident. This life is far beyond accident. There's too much purpose and plan than just random coincidence. And the biggest problem I have with it is, okay, I'll roll with you guys. Let's say I'll become an atheist right now. I'm off the God wagon. That's cool. The problem I have is, how do I function in society? Because you go, well, we'll just have moral right or wrong. It's like, by whose standards? By your standards? What if right now it's survival of the fittest? I'm animal, and I'm the highest evolved animal on the planet, and you're in my way. I need your money. I'm going to rob you, and I need your woman, too. I'm going to rape her and tie her up and put her in the back and drag her back to my cave, and what are you going to do about it? Well, that's wrong. By whose standard? Well, you know, it's just not fair as a human being. Well, animals kill each other and eat each other. It's like, I'm
well,
animal.
Even legal foundations, some of them were built on natural law, which is biblical doctrine. And Clarence Thomas used that phrase of natural law a lot when he was around the time that he was being nominated for the Supreme Court.
Can I read
something quick?
Go for it.
This is the God particle. It's also known as Higgs boson. In particle physics, elementary particles and forces give rise to the world around us. Nowadays, physicists explain the behavior of these particles and how they interact using the Standard Model, a widely accepted and remarkably accurate framework based on gauge, invariance, and symmetries believed to explain almost everything in the world we see other than gravity. But by around 1960s, all attempts to create a Gaussian variant theory for two of the four fundamental forces had consistently failed at one crucial point. Although Gaussian invariance seemed extremely important, it seemed to make any theory of electromagnetism and the weak force go haywire by demanding that either many particles with mass were massless or that non-existent forces and massless particles had to exist. Scientists had no idea how to get past that point. Well, what happened was is they eventually discovered there was like a pre-existing force that created these particles, and it was called the God particle.
Right.
And that's proof that we live in an eternal universe. Things may change with form and matter, but God, there was a originating force named God who did it.
Right, and you can call it whatever you want. It's just like looking into painting. You go, someone painted it. You look at a car, you say, someone made it. You look at a bird, oh, well, it had it had parents. It came from other birds. And yet we look at the world and the creation, we go, but there's no creator. It's like, no, there's a creator for everything. Everything is based on it. And the problem I have is, or the resolution I have in Christianity is, in believing in a God, there's a higher authority. He set it all in motion, and these are the rules. These are his commandments. It's very plain. We needed salvation. He sent the most historical, famous person that everyone knows for resolution. He uses a people that he said was promised, which are Jews, to display his message of forgiveness and mercy. He used a Jew, Jesus, on the cross to be the sacrifice, so they no longer have to sacrifice animals, which they don't do. They did reject Jesus as their Messiah, so they're waiting for that Messiah to come and liberate them. But the point is, he did all the work. It's a very plain, clear statement. If you take that out of my equation, I'm left to defend for myself and create my own little logic of natural law or order. Well, maybe Clarence Thomas has his, but maybe I'm Hitler. Or maybe I'm, Tojo or Mussolini.
The thing is that Jesus is the center point of history, even before BCE, before the Common Era, and CE, the Common Era. They used to call it, when we went to school, it was BC and AD. The thing is that what if Bill Maher got a stroke tomorrow and his brain was tangled up and he couldn't talk and he could only mumble? Then what would happen? What would happen to Bill Maher if he could only, write down words? Maybe if one of his arms was working right, would he be humbled and would he still denounce God even more?
I think he would. He would still be arrogant. I think that's his style. There is a book. I forget the name of it. There's one for martyrs. It's called Fox's Books of Martyrs. It's about Christian people who have died at professing God and Jesus. And then there's also another book that talks about, it's basically the last words of atheists. And when you study the difference between the two, it's like night and day. All the Christian people, as they're getting burned at the stake or killed or crucified or lanced or whatever they, the various different ways, they're all saying things like, I'm ready to go, heaven's before me, I praise God, I'm all right, my soul's at rest. And you read these famous atheists over time, different people like the kind of the Thomas Paine kind of people, and their statements are always things like, woe is me, I have no hope, life is futile. If there was a God, even if there was
guess
one, he
when
wouldn't
it
hear
was
me.
Published.
I'm sorry?
Do you know when that book was published?
I don't, but it's pretty, it's about 20 or 30 years ago, because I remember in the 70s when
1500, it was created in 1563, and it was 60 distinctive woodcut impressions undertaken around England, and it lists all the martyrs from the time, from the time
book,
Christ
yeah,
died
right.
through English Reformation.
Nice. And the other one I was speaking of, though, of famous atheists, I don't know when that was published or, you know, who compiled it, but I do know in the 70s when I was doing street witnessing, this is like 30, 40 years ago, late 70s, we had reference to it, and I just read some of these quotes from these various historical figures who didn't believe in God, and I tell you, it was just totally dark and gloomy and no hope. And I've been around Christians who have died, who have been in hospitals with terminal illnesses, and I can just tell you, it's just amazing, their faith, their ability to look into the future and to have a smile, and it's just different. And to choose between the two, I'll go with Christianity. I'll go with having a faith than going godless and just blindly into oblivion.
Well, I don't even, you know what, I've heard people use that argument before, and possibly you even did on the show. But, you know, I don't have to gamble like that because God's already revealed to me the truth. Nor do I have to explain it. But I know what your basic premise is, though. Like, even if there was room for doubt, you wouldn't want to go that way.
Right. And just comparing the society of what we would have, I always put it this way. If there wasn't a God, you would pray to God that I believe there is a God after you saw what I would do if there was no God. Because maybe you have restraint and maybe you have your morals and ethics, but my sensibilities, even though I'm trying to be a cool, nice guy, the next time some guy blares his horn on me, you know, the next time someone steals my car, steals my woman, you know, have the loss of all things that I have encountered, if I didn't have Christianity as a centering force to calm me, the terror that I would unleash on this planet, I don't even want to see. And that's just, and I'm just a mellow dude. I can't even imagine a drug addict or some, you know, person of low restraint that's out there in society, like we see in the headlines from time to time. It's like, it would be terrible. So I thank God I believe in God.
You know what? I wanted to just play one more. Don did say he was joining the show this morning, but a lot of times he works long hours and then falls asleep. So apparently he didn't make it, but I want to play one more segment. 1 second, okay?
Okay.
When they're reduced to demanding the right to not serve wedding cake to gay people. That's the biggest problem facing America, not climate change or terrorism or the wealth gap, but gay cake. It's not like gays are asking bakeries to make a giant penis cake that goes from soft to hard and squirts out buttercream. Which reminds me, the big party is tomorrow. Now, ever since Indiana Governor Mike Pence signed his Religious Freedom Restoration Act, he and like-minded conservatives have been trying to have it both ways. They hate discrimination, but they love the Bible. A book that commands you to discriminate. That's what it says. Gay is an abomination, and we must destroy it by denying it pastry. Of course, the root of this problem is that more than half of all Americans still believe the Bible is the actual or inspired word of God. But now 55% also support gay marriage, which must be very confusing. On the one hand, clearly, God has spelled it out. He hates fags. But you like your gay neighbors, Rob and Larry. But the Bible tells you to kill them. Yes, it literally says, kill them. What to do? Well, if you're Christian attorney Matt McLaughlin from nearby Orange County, you write a ballot initiative which calls for killing all the gay people in California because, to quote Mr. McLaughlin, better that offenders should die rather than that all of us should be killed by God's just wrath. Now, I know you're saying this guy is so far out on the fringe, but that's the scary thing. He's not. And this is what never gets discussed in these religious freedom issues. The reason fundamentalists are so stubbornly anti-gay is they truly believe that condoning homosexuality would bring on God's wrath. This is what Jerry Falwell...
Okay, I'm not going to play the other part.
Uh-huh.
What do you think?
Well, he's half right, but he's also slanting, of course, his angles. I mean, do we really practice killing gays? Now, I know there's some people will go out and attack a gay person and just, you know, they're homophobic or whatever. But I'm talking, you go to a church, is your pastor telling you go out and kill homosexuals? No. I think what he's confusing is, I'm a Christian, and I totally believe the Bible. And Old Testament law was very strict on rules and punishment. New Testament law, Christ brought in forgiveness and grace and all these wonderful things. These are what we're supposed to practice, turn the other cheek, do unto others, etc. The thing about it is, as a person, I don't care what anyone practices. In fact, you want to have sex with balloons? Go for it. Live your life. Do your thing. Be that thing. But now I, as an American, have a right to vote for what kind of society I want to have, what kind of society I want to encourage. You know, I want to have women meet men and have babies, and those kids grow up with certain values and a fear of respect of God and of right and wrong. And so I want to have laws that encourage that society. I'm not going to kill gays. I'm not going to arrest them. I just want to encourage family lifestyle. And as an American, I have the right to vote that. Now, Americans have the right to vote against that if they want to. If they want to have a culture that's all transgender, or you want to have a society, we could vote tomorrow and have rules where people could have sex with animals. We could do that as a culture. We say, this is what we want to do. And let's, you know, and if the courts allowed it and they legally thought, yeah, we can do that, you know, it could become a law. And the point is, we have that freedom to do that. I'm not in favor of that. I'm not in favor of sex with minors. I'm not in favor of incest. But we could vote for it if we wanted to. It's been practiced before in other cultures. So the question is, I have a right to that opinion and to vote that way. They have a right to that opinion, too. I don't think they're bad people. Go ahead. Anyone who wants to vote the other way, go for it. But I have that right. Don't say I'm a bad person. Now, if I go out and I start attacking people in the streets and committing vigilante justice, that's wrong. I'm a bad person. But not for voting for, you know, a better
society.
Well,
Bill Maher is partially right according to the Old Testament. And I agree with what you said about people can choose what they want because God's the ultimate judge. Leviticus 18:22 says, "Do not lie with a man as one lies with a woman. That is detestable." Leviticus 20:13 says, "If a man lies with a man as one lies with a woman, both of them have done what is detestable. They must be put to death. Their blood will be on their heads." But here's a softer version in the New Testament. 1 Corinthians 6:9-10. "Do you not know that the wicked will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived, neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor male prostitutes, nor homosexual offenders, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor drunkards, nor slanderers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God." And that last verse I read really has to do with people who are, what direction their heart is for God and if they're seeking the eternal kingdom. It's not, yes, someone who stopped drinking 5 years ago and had a slip up, I'm pretty sure they're not going to be condemned to hell. But the people who have, flaming desires that they can't extinguish and they will refuse to follow God may be in trouble.
Well, it lumps in there people that swindle, you know, people that commit certain crimes. It's people, Christians or moral leaders, forget those passages. What about the guy in the congregation that's committing adultery? What about the person who cheats on their taxes? There's a bunch of angles there, and they just want to focus on the moral issue. Jesus didn't spend 90% of his time talking about homosexuality or sexual sins. He's just talking about forgiveness, about following, about seeking the kingdom of heaven. And he wasn't into promoting a bunch of rules and regulations. He was talking about the condition of your heart and following God.
I've heard homosexuals say Jesus never brought up homosexuality. That is kind of true because Paul talks about it in Romans and Corinthians, and the Old Testament does, but Jesus himself didn't.
Yeah,
but he might have
made
an innuendo through morality or something.
Right, and I mean, that wasn't his purpose, is to legislate morality. The condition of a person's heart affects you, whether you do right or wrong. So you can give a bunch of rules, but if someone in their heart is hardened, they're not going to be honest. They're not going to be truthful. They're going to cheat. They're going to lie. They're going to abuse people. That comes from the heart. I mean, you can have all the rules you want, and that's good that we do have rules. But that's just the basic effect of the condition of the heart. You know, it's the repercussion. We're just trying to just solve just the, you know, the symptoms of it. They're not trying to get the real cure to it.
Well, I think the reason I did this show tonight, you know, I could have weighed, you know, sometimes I only have a brief period of time to make a decision. But basically, I picked this show tonight because I think that Bill Maher is basically getting off kilter. You know, like, he's not... Fareed Zakaria, you missed some of the dialogue in the beginning of the show, but Fareed Zakaria basically said that he's ineffective in his approach on religion. And Fareed Zakaria is very well known as a CNN host of several shows. And, you know, it's good to call people on their shit, because it's okay if Bill Maher doesn't want to be a believer, but just to tear things down and not really be influential in the way he wants to be, because he's ultimately, in my opinion, making a fool out of himself with his lack of rational statements. But
he wanted to go totally rational on it, well, what about atheists? What about the things that come up out of atheism, like communists, like out of Russia, or, you know, the in China? How many millions and millions of people have been killed? And we talked earlier about Margaret Kosma, who survived in Hungary, World War II, and her thing, she said, these were bad. She said that wasn't the terror. The terror was the Russians when they came in. Those godless people, because they were raping old women and children, and
but
just,
you know,
they were
what?
Brutal.
My pastor went to Russia this year, and in the last 5 years, they've recently opened some Lutheran churches by St. Petersburg. You know, it was just between Lenin and Stalin, there was a period where they chose structure and organization and government planning over the power of religion. And it was really a small leadership that decided to pretty much shut out religion. I mean, it wasn't a consensus among the Russian people. They still wanted to worship in the Orthodox churches. So,
people always do. You know, there's always, if you take out God and you eliminate hope, you create a vacuum, a God vacuum, and only God can fill that. And you put a society that doesn't have that value system. There, you know, it was like in China, people were jumping out of buildings in these factories. There's no hope. And what they did is they put a net around the building, so
kidding?
That people could jump and they would be caught. Yeah, they don't publicize this stuff, but yeah, in fact, it was on Russell Brand did a special called the Messiah Complex, and he talked a little bit about that. And so, if you can imagine, imagine at our place, like the downtown, you know, the ARCO building or Wells Fargo building, and it's like, yeah, people are just, you know, they're tired of their jobs, they just jumped out. They didn't want to work anymore, and they built nets around there to catch them.
Shit. That's not
fun. And
how many
millions of people, right? They would line up people in big graves in Russia and in these countries that they would go into. I shouldn't even say Russia, but more in the countries they would invade. They just shoot people and drop them in there. Millions, you know, over 100 million in you know, to those regimes. No, people don't talk about that. It was atheism. You know, it was that lack of fearing God and just of ruthless destruction of people. People were disposable, and they still are in China.
See, the thing that Well, we already know what the fate of Bill Maher is, and he could maybe be on the air 5 more years, but he still is going to have a fate, just like the rest of us. And I don't have to stand here on this show tonight and condemn him fully. In fact, I could probably pray for him. But the thing is that I just think that if you're hosting a national show, and maybe it is run by private cable, but I still think that he's rather useless. And I just think, you know, it's time to go away.
Well, the thing, though, about him, though, is he
if
voices...
I was president, I don't know if I'd let him have free speech. I consider him a dangerous loser at this point.
But he voices what a lot of people are thinking and feeling. And I have friends that used to be Christians, a couple, and they would
used
listen
to
what he says. Yeah, used to be. I mean, they were in bands with me. We go out in streets performing and sharing Jesus. And then they get married. They went through bad divorces and through experimenting with drugs and going through all kinds of life process of questioning, where was God and why did this happen in my life? And a couple of them, they're atheists. You know, at least one for sure, diehard atheist. And he listens to guys like that, and he listens to comedians that are very anti-God, or even guys like George Carlin, you know, who he'd do routines on, you know, hey, you know, why do they collect money at church? Does God run out of money? You know, just really bitter, angry people. Some of the stuff is funny. Some of it's true. But the whole angle just gets really dark when you don't have faith. And, I'm just really... I'm in a really good space, but I understand that some of these thoughts in the public on YouTube or Twitter, some of these views that you're talking about, you'd be crucified for saying, you know, for planting.
Well, I have 318 Twitter friends, and I went down to 317 tonight, so let's see where this goes from here.
Yes.
In a sense, I call the man a spiritual assassin because I consider him, he's harmful. His approach is harmful because he's teaching people really how to hate.
Well,
you know?
I've seen bits of his special. I haven't seen the whole thing in fairness, but I have seen his routines from time to time on TV. And on the TV special, he takes the dumbest, stupidest, you know, hick people. And they're very, I mean, you can find a very stupid atheist out in the street that's babbling and start just making fun with them. And you know, you can find idiots in anything, any arena, and start talking to them and playing, you know, with their words and twisting them around. And so basically Jesus is like Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy and so forth. You can take a couple scriptures and just... take them out of context or twist it and to fit your agenda and film it and make a special. But you could do the same with any faith, any idea, with any Americans, right? How many people
I'm just wondering why he's beating this horse down so much. Like, why does he feel so threatened?
Because a person in his situation wants to do whatever they want. You know, as Aldous Huxley said, I was an atheist for reasons of sexual and political. As long as
really?
Interpreted, it means just as long as there's no God, I can screw whoever I want, I can do whatever I want, and I don't have to answer to any higher authority. And if you factor in God, suddenly I have to be accountable for the way I think and the way I act. So I actually understand and to a certain degree appreciate where he's coming from. You know, hey, if I didn't want to be a Christian too, I'd want to have free reign. And you got to eliminate God or morality to do that.
Yeah, Aldous. How do you say his name again?
Aldous
somebody
Huxley. He did Animal Farm and a few others. You know, he was a very
That was George Orwell. Huxley wrote
Brave New World, probably.
Yeah, it was Brave New World. He's a very intelligent man, so even him framing his speech like that, there was a reason behind it. It was almost like a mockery because He probably pretty much knew for sure that's not the case.
Yeah,
you can't just eliminate God.
And the reason, I mean, I mention it is because I had to read Brave New World, and at the end of, you know, at the back of it was, you know, the quote, and so I was kind of like, whoa, this really sticks out, you know. So it's interesting. In fact, I'll take a look and see if I can find out. You know,
well,
some,
we only have 4 minutes of the show to go, and let's see. I made it a 45-minute show. Don didn't join us, and I forgot my writings in the car, so we can't go over some of the Christian stuff tonight. But is there any other topics you want to bring up? We technically have a 15-minute overtime.
I just think, you know, it was a very, very cool, you know, segment and some very controversial stuff. And so it's interesting. I was just looking to see if I could find something on Huxley on that. I'll have to look around a little bit more. But
I'll do it while you're talking. He wrote Brave New World. See, my friend Lionel wrote a book about the underground literary movement in L.A., and he interviewed that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He used to live out by Palmdale.
Wow.
Yeah, so I just have problems pronouncing his first name. It's Aldous Huxley.
Yeah.
And
I think
he was born in 1932, it looks like. Wait, no, he wrote the novel in 1931. I think it was kind of like a fatalist book, like 1984 by George Orwell. And you're right on that, along those lines.
Yeah. So I think just what we are running into as a culture is that we're in a society that wants freedom, and we're in it's a cycle of, call it depravity, but it's just going down lower levels, and it's in every culture. I'm not like thinking of something revolutionary. This is common to whether it's Rome or you know, the collapse of any society of, you know, of like with Greece and with Egypt and other cultures. There's a certain period where the culture strays, starts becoming decadent.
Yeah,
and
he, correct, go ahead.
It's basically the decline of any great civilization. It's not something new. I'm not inventing something. It's just a cycle. And we're in an area where we've been blessed and prospered and very successful. We had a strong certain moral base, and people have grown up spoiled, wanting more, wanting to and you study the Old Testament, the history of Israel. They had these cycles over and over again. And basically they become decadent and out of control, and the society collapses. And then it has to be reborn again, and with people going back to core principles and starting their society over again. And it's just a cycle.
So you read it in high school?
Yes, had to read Brave New World, had to read Animal Farm, a few others. And they were all, I mean, very interesting, very smart works. You know, I'm not...
same guy who wrote Animal Farm wrote 1984. The novel opens in London, and in 2005-40, but he's really embracing the Industrial Revolution and mass production and how that breaks down, and then he deals with people like Native Americans who were gathered on reservations in America and treated like savages. And there's three sections to the book, Wikipedia says. It's one section is about the break, you know, how people who are loyal to industrialism are honored on a high level. Then there's the reservation and the savage, like what to do with outcasts. And then the savage revisits the world state. So you described it very well for not reading it for years and years and years.
Yeah, in fact, here we go. He was talking about he didn't want to have the world to have meaning. And for myself, the philosophy of meaningless was essentially an instrument of liberation, sexual and political. And when you find no meaning in the world, it's like you're free to create your own reality, basically. And And he has other, like, comments. I'm looking to see the connection with atheism, but he was an atheist, and he didn't believe in, you know, in God as we know it.
Yeah,
but
the other thing I was thinking is, let's just say, I believe I read a long time ago, and don't quote me, but Bill Maher was raised a Catholic, and let's just say he had a semi-enlightening childhood, like with nuns and praying and doing the rosary and attending Catholic school and learning the precepts of God. Can't he just take that life experience and take the good and, you know, separate the good from the bad experiences and realize that whatever way he was meant to be raised happened, and it's just part of his history instead of just standing up and attacking the whole thing?
You know, it's possible. I mean, I had a friend today very distressed, and because she'd seen in the news that basically, I'm trying to think which country it is, a group of men raped a 70-year-old nun. And, you know,
It was like in India or Bangladesh, I believe.
Yes, it was in India. That's what I wanted to say. And so the point is, it's like, you know, people do stuff like that. It's like, why would you do that? Well, because she was defenseless. You know, this was a target. Like, why would you do a sick thing like that? Yeah, and she'd have to forgive them after they were done. You know, it's just the whole thing of mocking the Catholic Church, mocking a religious subject. You know, because you could know she's a nun by the way she's dressed and where she came from. It's not like, you know, how would you know? Here it's like saying, I'm a God girl and let's violate this. And that's the kind of world, you know, we're living in. And they were concerned, like, can it get any darker? And I said, yes, it can get very dark. And, you know, people will actually...
Just like how ISIS dominates those women in those rural areas when we did our show on the on the Nineveh Plains unit a few weeks ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting kind of tired tonight because I had to work 16 hours today. So let's end the show on a fall wherever the truth leads you.
Yes. Well, I would say follow the truth wherever it leads you, unless it's as a guest host on the Bill Maher show discussing transgender gay liberation.
I want to mention a point. He also had, previous to the clip that I played, they were talking about that Bostonian terrorist, and Bill Maher said that he didn't want to give that young Russian guy the death penalty because then he would go into his Islamic paradise and get what he wants. So I guess my final words are follow the truth wherever it leads you. Unless it's to eternal paradise where we're all destined to hell or paradise. Figure it out, Bill Maher. I hope you do.
Oh, I'm sure he will.
But my car is destined for Minneapolis today, so I need traveling mercies. And I hope you have a great week.
Yes, you too. Go forward. Be productive person, and Godspeed to you. And you know, may His grace be upon you when the hammer strikes again.
The hammer will gather information as she goes. And I want to end the show by saying that Hillary Clinton officially announced her candidacy this weekend. So she's in the race.
Which means, I guess, we're going to have our first lesbian president.
Ha ha, but the Republicans are out for blood and they're still trying to grind the axe on Benghazi. So I hope it's not some kind of witch hunt in the Congress before she even gets her campaign off the ground.
I think she'll do well. I'm just speaking off the top of my head. I don't know I think some of it has to do with the void of really good competition. I don't think the Republicans have a significant player to counter her. I could be wrong. And a lot of it depends on, you know, support. I have a feeling there's a lot of dirt on the Clintons that will come up. But the problem is, I think the women and the gay vote and people, a lot of people aren't gay, but they're jumping on that bandwagon of supporting it, like I'm straight, but I'm going to
right.
support homosexuality.
And the
they're
poor
victims.
And the immigrants.
Right, so we're lumping them with minorities and so forth. So I think what will happen is I think the common people will say, you know, don't attack our hero, liberator chick. I could be wrong. I think that's kind of the angle that it, I think it will propel her more because they're going to go, look, she's got her moral stand here. She's fighting up for all people, and I think that's what's going to happen. I could be wrong.
I'm just afraid that my Social Security will become private, and there's reasons why I do want to vote Republican, but I'm afraid for the poor to suffer, and it is a rather big divide, and I think it's going to be between Marco Rubio and Hillary. I don't know if Jeb Bush can pull it off.
Yeah, I think with Bush, it's going to be too tainted with his you know W's situation. They're going to try to link everything to the war in Iraq, and I think with the Clintons, a lot of it comes down to money. Besides your marketing, so I think they're going to be able to raise a lot of money. I think you know Bill's going to do a lot of fundraising. Obama
Same
will do
here.
A lot of fundraising.
Don't forget that Jeb Bush was instrumental in George winning Florida in 2000, and that was controversial.
Right.
Because
I think
Catherine Harris screwed up the ballots.
Yeah. So I think it's not going to be popular with him. I could be wrong, but I would say the Republicans would have to come up with a minority or some kind of really strong candidate, and I don't see that right now. And people are going to go because she was, you know, a representative of the government for so long. She already knows all the foreign people, and she, you know,
she
has experience
in the
White House.
She was a senator, a president's wife, and a secretary of state.
Yeah, so
by
experience,
they're going to have to build a strong campaign against her.
Yeah, and the only thing I think they could gather is the fact that she's got a long track record of having a lot of mistakes and covering them up. On the downside, people are going to go, look, she's been with us our whole life, and how bad can things get? I mean, we can trust her. You know, we're still here as a government, and with her, you know, in running half of the show and being behind the scenes, so why not trust her with the whole thing? And I think it'll gain the momentum, just like with Obama being the first black president, even though he was half white, he'll be like, we can have our first woman president. I think women are just going to, you know, just run after that. If she's on Oprah and Oprah endorses her, it's over.
I think she's obviously the most visible candidate, but I do think our country still has a lot of conservatives in it, and I could think it's 50-50. It could go either way.
Well, I think kind of here's how it rolls. This is my rule of thumb, and that is basically Republican. If you out of 10 people, really, 4 of them are Republican and 4 Democrats. And one of them is usually a swing vote. One of the, you know, or two, you know, 2 out of 10. They're swing. They'll go either way, wherever the economy is, or wherever how cute the candidate is. And what I'm saying is, out of that 10 people, at least one out of those 10 is going to be a woman who's going to get excited. Just like with Obama, I know lots of friends. They only voted for him because we could finally get a black president. Let's just see what's going to happen. They got caught up in that. Like it really didn't.
Yeah,
care.
And then fragments of the Senate, all they did was attack him and try to tear him down all 8 years.
Right, so they like...
He never really got his footing, in my opinion.
Right, so kind of what I'm saying, what's going to happen with Hillary, there's going to be that 10 or 20% that's floating out there. They're going to go, this is our chance, the first woman president. Finally, now we are empowered. We're going to show them what a woman can do. And I'm just telling you, it only takes 10% little sweep, right? Like, usually the votes are 55-45 or 60-40. You know, you get a 10-point sweep, and boom, you know, you got a new president.
Right, like
so
an 8-point spread or something like that.
Yeah, so I would say she's got the edge if she doesn't, you know, screw it up.
Well, you never know, you know, people can get, they could get cancer or something. You can't really predict the future.
I put my money down, though, on Hillary actually winning it off the top, just as
a
commentator.
I wouldn't want to run for office at age 65 or 66. I think it would be pretty strenuous, but... More power to her. So with that, I will politely end the show due to my fatigue, And I'll call you from Paisley Park Studios in Chanhassen tomorrow. No, I'm kidding. Have a good week then, okay?
Okay, and word out to the Republican Party, the only way you're going to get back in the race is you need to have a transgender midget. And then suddenly, whoa, now you can swing the vote the other way for sympathy. So, yeah.
Transgender midget with his own reality show.
Yes, now we're talking. You know, maybe Chaz Bono will even jump in the race. Now you got the best of both worlds. Not only the first woman, the first male former.
Sonny Bono's legacy as a congressman.
You could have it both ways.
We did have a dwarf in the White House.
Really?
George W. Bush IQ.
Oh, wow. That was a slam.
Okay,
like
well,
that
with that, I'm not going to politically divide our country. Bill Maher, you're going to heaven or hell, and I hope you enjoy the ride. With that,
yes.
I'll send you 16 virgins, and I'm ending the show.
Good night, Hammer. Godspeed.
Godspeed. Goodbye.